The Texas Forest Service of A&M College brings you a story about barbed wire. Texas in the early days was a land of open range. Cattle roamed wherever they pleased. Fences were few and a long way apart. Oh, occasionally somebody did a little fencing. There was a cattleman in northwestern Texas who owned 10,000 head of cattle and only 320 acres of land. One day he said to his wife,
"Mary, them consarn cattle of ourn is always hanging around the house here, and I'm a-getting tired of it. They seem to think they ain't another acre of land around here to graze on. I'm a-going to put up a rail fence all around our property and keep them out. I won't have them a-bothering me."
Well, that was the way most people looked on the range. And if anyone had wanted to fence the huge areas of grazing land, it would have been almost impossible. The only fences known were the rock and rail fences, and there weren't enough rocks and timber in many parts of the state to build even a fence around a house. Then in the year 1857 occurred a significant event. A Swiss named Grininger was working in the old iron foundry in Austin. He had a house with a small orchard and garden near Waller Creek. One evening, he was sitting at home on the front porch of his house when he heard a voice out in front.
"Hey there, Grininger. Are you home?"
"Yeah. Come on up and sit down, Mr. Becker."
"I don't mind if I do. Say, I got something I want to ask you."
"If I can help you, I will."
"Well, some of the neighbors have been talking. They said something ought to be done about it. What's this about some kind of fence you've put up around your peach trees?"
"It's a new fence I have made at the foundry. I have twisted two wires tightly together and put sharp pieces of hoop iron between the wires every few inches. It is to keep the cows from coming in and pushing down my peach trees or stepping on my watermelons."
"I don't see why you have to wind those pieces of sharp iron into the fence. That cuts up everybody's cows."
"It is the only way to teach the cows to stay out of my orchard and garden. If I did not have the bits of iron to stick them, they would go on through the fence."
"Well, some of the neighbors don't like it. Then, too, some of the youngsters from around here have been getting hurt on the fence. Howard Jones' youngest boy got all scratched up, not to mention getting his pants tore."
"Why did he have to come through the fence?"
"Well, I don't know. I didn't ask Howard."
"Well, it looks as if I'll have to take down my fence and let the cows and the boys go through. Maybe it wasn't such a good idea. Tell the other people that I'll take down the fence as soon as I can get..."
And so ended the first story of barbed wire. But in a few years, several patents were issued in the East to inventors of various kinds of barbed wire. Because Texas was a fertile field for fencing, it was to be expected that a salesman should soon appear there to sell the wire. H.B. Sanborn, representing the two partners Joseph F. Glidden and I.L. Elwood, was probably the first barbed wire agent to come to Texas. John W. Gates was also credited with being an early barbed wire salesman. Many of the Texas people were skeptical of this new invention, and sometimes they had to be convinced it would work.
"I forgot to tell you, Pete, there's a drummer who's come to town to sell some newfangled fencing wire. Did you hear about it?"
"No, I didn't. I just come to town."
"Well, he has, and he's trying to show how good it is. He's got a fence corral he made out of some of this here wire down at the fur end of town. He's going to put some longhorns in it pretty soon. Want to go down and have a laugh at him?"
"I sure do. Which way'd they go? Down this way?"
Yeah, it's just down here and around the corner."
"Oh, any fool ought to know that a critter can't be stopped by a couple of strands of wire. Why, I've seen a steer tear right through the side of a wood corral like it wasn't even there. Oh, trust some city drummer to come in with a fool notion like that."
"Yeah, I reckon he's got the idea that these here are tame cows. It might stop the milk cows they raise up east, but not the sort of beef we got around this country. He had some of the ranchers around here get a hold of 25 of the wildest critters they could find."
"Hey, there they are now. They're just herding the cows in the gate of the corral."
"Them cattle are a wild-looking bunch, all right. Look at that drummer over there in a derby hat. He's getting ready to start them running."
"But the steer's only making a little pass at the fence this time. Hey, did you see that red-spotted one? He got his nose stuck with some of those little stickers in the wire that time. Oh, they're getting mad now. Hey, watch them go right through it this time."
Uh-oh, they're heading for it now. They're going to tromp that fence right down. Well, I'll be doggone. It stopped them. Stopped them dead in a mackerel. Two measly strands of wire with some stickers on it.
Yes, it stopped the cattle all right. More and more of the ranchers began buying the new wire to fence in pastures. It was one way to improve the grade of cattle by keeping scrubby, stray cattle away from the herd. The wire held cattle to their own range so they were more easily found. But something else came with the fence. The fence cutter and trouble. When a man fenced land in, he fenced everybody else out. Men had taken it for granted that the range was free to everyone. Nobody had worried much about who owned the land he had been using to graze his cattle. Now the fences were tightening in the open range. Some of the ranchers refused to submit to this new practice. Cowboys saw their jobs vanishing if wire fence were used to control the herds. So, men began riding at night to cut their neighbors' fences. Neighbor turned against neighbor. Friend turned against friend. All over Texas flared up a series of feuds known as the fence-cutting war.
Say, Harry, did you hear that Bill Manners of the Diamond A is a-looking for Joe Stevens of the Y Bar?
Is that so? What happened, George?
Well, I hear that Joe cut the Diamond A's new barbed wire fence. Joe claimed that he needed water for his stock, and Bill Manners of the Diamond A had built the fence all around the water hole so Joe's cattle couldn't get to it.
Well, does Bill Manners really own all that land he's got fenced in?
Well, I don't know. He claims he does. Of course, he might have included a little land on top of what he's paid for. Anyway, the water hole's in the middle of it.
Joe Stevens been using that hole quite a few times for watering his stock, hasn't he?
Yep, he has, Harry. He's got a water hole all his own, but it dries up pretty frequent, and he's been in the habit of herding his stock over to the water hole by the Diamond A whenever he needed it. Now, Bill Manners has fenced in his place because he says he's trying to improve the grade of his stock.
Yeah, I knew he'd shipped in some of that blooded stock.
Well, now, what made Bill Manners especially mad was that when Joe Stevens and his Y Bar boys cut the fence and turned their cows into the water hole, they stampeded that blooded stock of Bill's, and now it's scattered from here to breakfast all over the country. And on top of it, Joe's boys set fire to a lot of Bill's fence posts, and you know how hard posts are to get around here.
Well, George, I reckon you can't blame him for being some mad. There's been a lot of fence cutting around here lately. Some rightly and some wrongly, I guess. I think some of these fence cutters do it out of just plain meanness, too.
Yeah, at least Joe Stevens thought he was in the right, though. But some of the night riders cut fences out of pure cussedness. And a lot of them are getting organized now in the bands. And those are the ones I think something should be done about.
Yeah, I heard a Texas Ranger give a description of that kind of fence cutter. He said a fence cutter is a feller who spends his time raising a few cattle and a whole lot of disturbance. He spends so much time attending sidewalk conventions that he doesn't have any time to fix up his home. He said some of the landowners are abused for wanting to do as they please with their own land. But a fence cutter's ideal liberty is to do as he pleases with his neighbor's land.
That's pretty good. Well, I reckon Joe Stevens ain't a typical fence cutter. He probably did have some reason for what he done.
Yeah. You know, I wished we could keep him from getting into a shooting scrape over this argument. Say, there comes Bill Manners now.
Howdy, boys.
Why, howdy, Bill.
Howdy.
Seen Joe Stevens in town?
Why, no, Bill. But why don't you settle your fuss peaceable? Have a drink with us and take it easy.
No, thanks, boys. There's one way to settle a fence cutter, and I figure on taking him easy. He's carried nippers for the last time.
I hate to see you do this, Bill.
Well, so long, boys. Think I'll take a look for him over at the livery stable.
So long, Bill. You know, Harry, he's going to run into trouble, all right. I think I saw Joe Stevens going into the livery stable a while back. Yep, there he is coming out there now.
All right, fence cutter. Go for your gun.
I'll be a son of a gun. Look at that, will you?
Hmm.
Reckon they both lost that argument.
The war between the fence builders and the fence cutters continued. The fence builders said they wanted to build up their herds and protect them from cattle thieves. And they said the fence cutters couldn't bear to see someone else own property. The fence cutters, on the other hand, claimed that many ranchers were fencing in roads, water holes, and lands which didn't belong to them. Fence cutting became so common that there were organizations of men who claimed that they would cut every fence in the state. A correspondent from Brown County reported that the fence troubles in that county had ceased because there were no more fences left in the county to be cut. In many sections, business was almost stopped, and investors of capital were frightened away from Texas. Immigration to the state nearly stopped. Then, one day in the year 1884, newspaper editor Tom Berry came running into Steve Pierce's general merchandise store.
Hey, Steve, I just got news that they passed a law down at Austin against fence cutting.
Yeah, that's so? When did you hear it?
Just now. I thought I'd run over and tell you about it. I got to go back and write it up for the Tribune.
Hey, what's the law say?
Well, it makes fence cutting a felony instead of a misdemeanor. And it says that you have to put a gate every 3 miles in a fence. Then, too, it says you can't fence land unless you own or lease it, and you can't obstruct public roads.
I reckon it's a good thing they finally passed a law like that. It should stop a lot of the scrapping around here.
Yeah. Well, I've got to go over and set this up in type so it'll be in tonight's paper. See you later. Oh, by the way, I guess this will probably increase your sales of barbed wire.
And so ends the story of the Texas fence-cutting war and the early days of barbed wire. Fence-cutting gradually died out, except in a few sections where it continued for a number of years. Today, barbed wire fences and the more recent woven wire fences are a familiar sight in almost every part of Texas. Thousands upon thousands of miles of fence stretch across the state. Wire fence needs fence posts. Mesquite and cedar posts in West Texas, post oaks and bodark in Central Texas, pine and hardwoods in East Texas are used to support the fences. Millions of fence posts are in use today. Thousands of Texas farmers produce fence posts for use on their own farms and ranches and for sale throughout the state, adding to their income. 10 million fence posts are cut each year from our East Texas forests. Millions more come from our other timber regions. The sale of these posts means income to many farmers, wages to the people who cut and haul them. A constant supply of timber can build a greater Texas. This transcription has been brought to you by the Texas Forest Service of A&M College. Music by Dwight Brown, narrated by Fritz Kuhler, written and directed by R. Verl Johnson.